I'm sick, I'm old, and I'm busted. Sometimes it cuts me like a knife. I'm blue, I'm tired, and disgusted. B.B. King, he wrote my life. B.B. King, he wrote my life.
Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone. This is issue number 49. I am your host, Aaron. Over to my left is Ethan.
Hello, I am Ethan. Forgive Aaron, he's a little ill today.
He is a little ill today. But who's joining us tonight, Ethan?
I don't know. Just some guy I found on the street. What's your name, sir?
I am Ben Gerber. How are you?
I'm good. And what is it you do, sir?
Well, I run a website called Troll in the Corner, which is based on tabletop gaming, and I also have a podcast myself called Old School Actual Play, in which we play a role-playing game that I played back in 1985, and then I hit max with hammers.
Now, the old game you played back in 85, is that Chutes and Ladders?
No, I was old enough to play a Palladium Fantasy role-playing game, first edition.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
Still have the same book.
Oh yeah!
Oh, it's awesome.
Uh-huh. You know our feelings on Palladium.
Awesome, awesome. Like,
so.
Yeah. This is before Mega Dam.
Sure.
We're all good.
Okay, well, there's that. There's that at least then.
Well, this is a weekly podcast where what we used to do is we used to talk about all kinds of gaggles of geeky goodness, and we decided that spread us out a little bit too thin. So we decided to, consolidate and put the comic book responsibilities over on the fine gentleman over at the Bag to Boardcast, and gaming stuff over to Gamer Shaven Podcast. And what we do is we are going to just talk about movies. We are starting up on the ongoing discussion that we are going to be having over the different kind of movie genres. Way that this is working is Ethan and I like to stand proud and stuck up and stuff and saying that we can talk about any movie genre. So what we do is we invite somebody on, and said person chooses the topic that we are going to be discussing tonight. Ben, what did you choose tonight and why?
Well, tonight I chose post-World War II Filipino independent film.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding.
That's a fine genre.
Yes, all three of them. I chose epic historical movies. And why did I choose this? It was the only one that hadn't been taken yet. Also, I, believe it or not, have a undergraduate degree in medieval studies and a graduate degree in archaeology. So this kind of shit just thrills the hell out of me.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to hearing your picks just based on that.
Just based off of that, it should be interesting. I mean,
because often Hollywood just screws up historical movies in general.
What? I thought that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
you
got to
give them a little bit of leeway.
Oh, yeah. You know, you got to give them leeway at least for an entertaining movie now and again.
And I have a few of those in my list.
So do I. So.
Those ones with the allowing of the leeway. However, before we get into that, we have a little segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. This is when we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. There is some news out this week. Not a whole lot of good news, unfortunately. There's some stuff that really kind of sucks. Do you want to open it up, Ethan?
The news that broke just the other night was for us very sad for us Doctor Who fans who just recently lost one of the long time members of the Doctor Who family. This time we lost Elizabeth Sladen, who played Mary Jane. Sarah Jane Smith on Doctor Who back in not only in recently the Sarah Jane Adventures and also the more recent cameo episodes of Doctor Who, but also back when it was, of course, Tom Baker and even sometime with John Pertwee in the 70s. Since she was in the End of Time three-parter on at the end of the fourth season of the new Doctor Who series, she officially was the longest-running quote-unquote Doctor Who companion. Before her, she was one episode, I think, behind the character of Jamie, who was the Scotsman. But sad to see her go. She died of cancer. And I haven't actually had a chance to see the Sarah Jane Adventures. I hear it's much more for younger audiences. But
right, it was on BBC Children or whatever show's called.
But it still had, you know, obviously had ties to Doctor Who and all that, and had K-9 in it and whatnot. So sad to see her go. It was kind of all of a sudden. Apparently, she'd been battling cancer for quite a while.
Yeah, I was not aware of that, but I'm not pretending like I was even close to an expert on her. But I saw that news, and I forwarded it on to Ethan because he's the big Doctor Who fan in this little podcast thing. Although I'm a fan as well, so it's sad to see.
Mm-hmm. And of course, previously we lost Nicholas Courtney, who played the Brigadier General Lethbridge Stewart from the original series as well. So they're starting to drop, sadly, but they are like that. That's the sad news, I believe, for the episode. We got some Dark Knight Rises news, though.
We do. Some casting news. Mm-hmm. As we've been reporting the hell out of, Joseph Gordon-Levitt has indeed been cast in the movie. We've been talking about it for a very long time. We now have the name of his character, who I am not remembering off the top of my head, because he is not from the books. Who is it, Ethan?
I do not remember. Let me...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is going to be playing John Blake in The Dark Knight Rises, and we finally have confirmation that Marion Cotillard will indeed be in the movie, although not as the character that we've been speculating. Speculation.
Some of us hoping for.
Some of us are hoping for. I'll get to that in a minute. She has been confirmed as Miranda Tate. These characters are officially being described as... Miranda Tate is a young, a Wayne Enterprises board member eager to help a still grieving Bruce Wayne resume his father's philanthropic endeavors for Gotham. And John Blake is a Gotham City beat cop assigned to special duty under the command of Commissioner Gordon. I don't know. I mean, getting into the speculating grounds, I don't buy it for a second that Cotillard is not.
Talia.
I don't buy it for a second.
Well, it would sort of working into like what the first movie was with Liam fucking Neeson, of course, was he was billed as being, you know, Ducard.
Yeah.
And as point of fact, he ended up being Ra's al Ghul.
So, well, right, exactly.
You know,
and the way that the movie ended up, even with the casting coming down the pipeline the way that it did, is there was people like, you know, being thrown around, considered for Ra's al Ghul. I specifically remember, I know they wanted Daniel Day-Lewis. I know they wanted Viggo Mortensen and blah, 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 blah. And then they're all like, yeah, it's confirmed. Liam Neeson is going to be playing Henri Ducard. I'm like, what? And then a couple of weeks later, it was announced that Ken Watanabe was going to be playing Ra's al Ghul, and
which was still cool, but
yeah,
I mean, sure. Ken Watanabe is very cool.
So. Yeah, he's a good actor, but I don't, you know, I mean, I mean, it sounds all, you know, sniveling fanboyish to me to be saying I don't give a crap who they play. I love them both, and you know, they're going to be in a Batman movie, so that's all I care about.
Speaking of Batman,
now, how much of this?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, how much of this obfuscation do you think is? You know, for marketing or to get people excited, and how much of it is somebody just sitting in their office going, I can't wait to just fuck with all these people and see what, what they're saying, and, you know, wait until we make the announcement and see what kind of buzz we actually get online.
Sure. I can honestly see Christopher Nolan pulling a few strings on it, you know, especially if she is Talia, and putting that out there that she's this character, and she probably is this character. It's probably, you know, a
pseudonym,
you know, a truth hidden in a truth type of thing wrapped in bacon.
Wrapped in bacon.
You know, I mean, she could be introduced as this character, who is, you know, this character that is, what did we say? Miranda Tate.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly it's a, you know, in the latter half of the movie, it's revealed that she's actually the daughter of
Ra's al Ghul
and is, you know, quite in fact, you know, the one of the bad guys.
Yeah.
So
she could also just be, you know, a Wayne Enterprises board member a year to help a still grieving Bruce Wayne resume his father's philanthropic endeavors. I don't think they're going to be going after an Oscar winner for that kind of role.
Hey, you guys never answered my question about Nolan and trolling the internet.
Okay. You'll have to ask it again. I was distracted.
Do you think all the media hoopla obfuscation about who's playing what part in the new Dark Knight movie is, how much of it is marketing, how much of it is just generating hype on the internet sort of virally, and how much of it is somebody sitting back in their office with their arms crossed going, oh my God, I can't believe people, you know, follow this shit so wildly. Mm-hmm. And then I can't wait to blow their minds when we actually make the announcement of who's playing who.
Aaron?
I don't think Christopher Nolan's got time for that shit, honestly. I mean, it might be
they'd probably hire someone to do it.
Yeah, so we're saying he probably hired someone to do that.
Maybe, but, you know, at the same time, they don't really need to turn the wheels in the machine because there's going to be idiots sitting in a tiny little room having a podcast talking about this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. whether or not they turn the money hose on it or not. So, I mean, who knows? Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
But speaking of Batman, there has been some nifty casting announcements.
Yeah.
Jump into it, Ethan.
Well, obviously the next big DC animated release is Green Lantern Emerald Knights, and it's pretty much done at this point. The next one they're doing, however, is Batman Year One. And they announced today, in fact, a mere 8 hours ago, they announced the voice cast for it. And we're going to get actors Bryan Cranston, Ben McKenzie, Eliza Dushku, Katie Sackhoff, and there was one more hidden in here somewhere. Let's see.
Cranston's Gordon, right?
Yeah, Cranston is playing Gordon. Bryan McKenzie is playing Bruce Wayne or Batman. Liza Dushku is going to be Catwoman, and Sackhoff is Detective Sarah Essen. And Alex Rocco, Mo Green himself from The Godfather, is playing Falcone.
Yeah.
So that's actually kind of cool.
My favorite Batman novel, graphic novels, are either it or Hush. But mm-hmm. Year One's just looking amazing. I mean, I can't wait.
Yeah, and I've actually had a chance. I sat down and I've sort of caught up on the Batman animated, or not the Batman animated, but the DC animated stuff that's been coming mm-hmm. out recently. And I got to say, Superman Batman Apocalypse was not very good.
No, not particularly. Wasn't particularly awful. But...
No, but it just wasn't good. Mm-hmm. And All-Star Superman was just sort of there.
Was that the thing? What was the thing that had Supergirl in it?
That was Apocalypse.
That I liked.
You like Superman Batman Apocalypse? See, I couldn't even finish it.
I liked the last fight in it.
Okay. I didn't get to the last fight then. I did enjoy their collection of shorts that they did, the showcase shorts.
I want to see more of those DVDs out.
I'd actually like to see Captain Marvel Black Adam one. Would be kind of cool. You know,
that was my least favorite on that whole
thing. See, my least favorite was the Spectre. I just didn't dig the Spectre.
I don't know about that, but my least favorite one was the Superman Captain Marvel one.
Yeah,
I'd seen the Jonah Hex one
before. It was on the Blu-ray for. Was it Red Hood? Under the Red Hood, I think.
Probably.
It was on one of those. So, you know, there's that. Also in DVD news, those of us who remember J. Michael Straczynski, comic book writer and creator of Babylon 5 and whatnot. Well, he worked on a show many, 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 many years ago in the 1980s called Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future. Do you remember that show?
Of course I remember that show.
Well, they announced today that they're coming out on DVD.
Cool.
I wonder if that means you're going to be able to buy the toys and shoot at the TV again.
I hope so. I hope so. That was so cool. I mean, obviously it's dumb, but when I was 5 when it came out, that was like the coolest, most revolutionary thing ever.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The other thing I see on here is I guess it was unofficial. I wasn't aware of it, but now it is official. Thor is going to be released on IMAX 3D.
Yeah, I didn't know that wasn't official.
Apparently. That hadn't been officially announced or some such, but mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, whatever. Speaking of 3D, there is a company out there that is releasing 2D glasses. Glasses you can take to the movie that will make it the 3D, not 3D, and make it back to 2D.
That's stupid.
I think it's funny.
Well, it is funny, but it's stupid because the only reason I wouldn't want to wear the glasses is because of how it makes everything so dark. And that wouldn't fix that, so I'd just not pay the $6 extra and go see the 2D version.
Yeah, yeah. But in the case of, like, IMAX 3D, you're sort of stuck. If you want to see it on IMAX, you have to see it in 3D.
And I know it, in my case, I know lots of people who get headaches from the 3D movies. And we do like to go to IMAX.
Oh, I love going to IMAX.
But that being said, I'd rather have a headache than have to, you know, pay a lot of money to wear some silly glasses to go see 1D minus.
They just look like normal, like, sunglasses, I guess. So, you know, I guess they're no worse than the 3D glasses you're going to get anyway. But, you know, 3D is, you know, 3D is to each their own on, really. But speaking of Thor, Kevin Feige, or Feige, or however you pronounce his name, has confirmed that there's going to be more Thor and Captain America sequels after the Avengers. They're going to go off on their own adventures and do more stuff. Again, I'm like, this is not a big surprise. Feige.
Feige.
Okay.
That's how I pronounce it.
Okay.
I think it's, you know, obviously it's probably going to make a lot of money, but, you know, it's a little preemptive at this point. Be all like, yeah, this is going to be great, and make all these sequels. I'm like, but that movie sucked.
And I'm just segueing away here, speaking of the Avengers, the Joss Whedon directing it, has let out that the music he's going to be using for Dr. Horrible 2 is almost done.
Sweet.
So they're going to do a Dr. Horrible 2. So, yes, he said that obviously it sort of centers around when they're going to do it is going to be sort of up to the schedules for, you know, Nathan Fillion and Neil Patrick Harris. And he even said Penny herself, the whose name escapes me.
Hey, I don't want to be all like official and stuff about this, but did you read that bullshit article I post on Facebook about, what's his face? Bryan Singer. Speculating on why Superman Returns didn't do better than it did.
I didn't see your link on it, but I did read that article, yeah.
That was insulting to me. I mean, it basically said everybody's stupid except for me. That's why this movie... that's why my movie sucked and, you know, or didn't do better than it did. And, you know, it had that non-committal, you know, even though it didn't make any money, I'm still very proud of it, and I don't say that about... You know, it's just... It was dumb. It was just such a silly article, and I hate that. I hate it.
I've given that movie multiple chances. I actually went and saw it twice in theaters because I was so about it after the first one. I was like, okay, maybe another viewing.
I never did see it in the theater, believe it or not. Yeah. I've seen it two or three times on DVD, and, you know, I mean...
I still like Brandon Routh. I mean,
sure.
All the casting in it was good except for Bosworth, but...
Yeah, and Spacey.
No, I like Spacey just fine. Spacey's just fun to watch, do whatever.
Sure.
But hey, Ben, did you catch the Game of Thrones at all on HBO this last weekend?
I was going to ask you about
it. I did not. As a matter of fact, I found it, you know, laying around the internet, and just waiting to get it onto my iPod so I can watch it.
Yeah,
so I don't have.
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm super excited about it. But apparently so is HBO because they've renewed it for a second season already.
Yes, yes, I heard it's done excellent. And I can tell you this, regardless of my viewing, I can already guarantee you that I will be buying the complete set as soon as it's available.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge fan of the books.
Huge fan of the books. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, the series has everything going for it. I mean, it's this, more or less the same production team that did Rome, which is an amazing series anyway. So I'm like...
Yep.
I'm so watching this series, it's not even going to matter. I got another bit. Apparently, Ultimate Spider-Man is still going on.
The comic books?
Yes.
Get the fuck out of here. I didn't know that.
Well, they're changing his costume, too.
Okay.
They released an image of his costume, but and I think it looks a little bit like the...
Turn off the dark?
No. it looks more like in line with what's going to be in the next movie.
Oh,
which okay. I find it amusing, but
they gotta scratch each other's backs. So.
Yeah, yeah, and I know John is listening, and he was such a huge fan of the Expendables.
Oh yeah,
he loved the Expendables. I, however, actually enjoyed the movie. Sylvester Stallone has confirmed he is not going to direct or write Expendables 2. He's just going to be in it. So, John, maybe that will mean that things will perk up a bit. I, however, found that first movie to be enjoyable, though.
I wasn't a big fan.
I just found it to be forgettable. I mean, I'm not speaking ill of it. I mean, it was what it needed to be, but just not for me.
Other news.
That stuff was cool in the '80s, but sure, I mean, not
so was parachute pants and neon.
Yes, exactly.
We
body glove, man.
Yeah, you know,
is it true that MC Hammer is going to be in the second one?
That'd be even cooler.
I hope so. That'd make it even more awesome.
Yeah.
But here's a bit of awesome for us Torchwood fans. Of course, Torchwood Miracle Day is coming out on Starz at some point. I don't know if they've actually set a release. It's of course the season 4 of Torchwood. Mm-hmm. Well, John DeLancey has joined the cast now. As far as I could tell, he's not a regular cast member, but he is going to be on Torchwood. And so is Bill Pullman. He was announced not too long ago.
It was a while ago, wasn't it?
And it's Miracle Day focuses around obviously Torchwood being a bit more international. It's going to, of course, have Captain Jack because you can't have Torchwood without Captain Jack, where everyone suddenly stops dying on Earth. And that's sort of the premise behind the series.
Hey, there was a Batman comic book about that. Rachel Gould did it.
Excellent. We didn't mention Nestor Carbonell is going to be in The Dark Knight Rises. Did you want to mention that at all?
I guess
we just did.
And Batman Well is going to be back as the mayor of Gotham City.
Uh huh.
That's cool. He
is Batman Well.
He is Batman Well.
Did you see that? Did you see the new Cowboys and Aliens trailer?
I did. I like.
You know, they moved it up from August into the very last weekend of July. Yeah. So.
Ooh.
So it's going to be competing with Captain America.
That's my birthday weekend. I have an excuse to go to the movies.
Yep. Exactly.
Neat.
Speaking of Captain America and Marvel movies, Tom Hiddleston, I think, John over
Tom
on
Hiddleston?
The...
Tom Hiddleston?
Tom Hiddleston. It's Hiddleston.
Hiddleston.
Mm-hmm, who is Loki in Thor.
Sure.
Let it slip that he's been contracted to play Loki in 5 more Marvel movies. So that would be 5 more beyond Thor, presumably. Mm. John over on the Bagged and Boardcast, of course, he broke that. He talked about it on Sunday, but... Mm-hmm. I just think it's kind of cool just to see where they're going with that.
Yeah, but Samuel Jackson had a 9-pitcher deal.
That's true.
So, I mean, it's...
And did you see... We of course, saw the Cowboys and Aliens trailer, but there's the Rise of the Planet of the Apes trailer came out, too.
I saw that, but I didn't watch it. Saw that. I just don't care. I'm not being all, like, you know, snooty and stuck up. I just don't care. I just don't really want to... I mean, I saw a picture of the monkey, and it looked okay. It looked kind of like Andy Serkis, but, you know... So, I mean,
hey, whatever works, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I've got here is some speculation on who that Feyora is going to be in the Man of Steel, apparently a villainous character from the comic books that I have no idea who.
Okay.
That is, but hey, moving on. I did see an announcement. Sony has agreed to co-finance and distribute Bond number 23 and 24,
which
means they've got another one in the pipe beyond the one that they're working on currently. Well, yeah.
James Bond.
Hey, I'm all for getting more Daniel Craig as James Bond.
So. Yeah, but if it's going to be Sony, then that means they're going to do what they did with, what was the one that they completely financed off of marketing tie-ins? It was Tomorrow Never Dies, and so there's going to be, you know, Ericsson cell phones everywhere and Vio laptops. And...
Another co-financing, so you know. I'm going to be optimistic about it. I've really dug the last couple of James Bond movies.
Yeah,
so.
I did too. I did too.
I mean, hopefully they won't turn out, you know, The World Is Not Enough or something. Because
The World Is Not Enough again.
The World Is Not Enough
The World Is again. Still Not Enough, God damn it.
Which was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, that was not a good movie. Not even a little bit. So why don't you say, let's move away from these geekly happenings and get into our roundtable discussion about the epic/historical film genre.
Bathing in holy wine.
Ben, other than the fact that it was one of the only ones left that you could choose from, what about this genre do you like?
Well, when I go to a movie, I like to get as much out of a movie as I possibly can because I have two young kids and a full-time job and a part-time job, you know, working on the website and stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I go to a movie, I love to see movies that are like 2 hours long. So that's one thing that I really enjoy.
Well, when you're talking these epics, sometimes you're talking, you know, 3 or 4 hours long too. So,
oh yeah. I mean, the longer, the better, in my opinion, you know,
it all depends on the movie really, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Barney, the movie, not so good.
No.
I also am a huge history buff. I have a couple degrees in history and archaeology, and I love to see one of the things that I really enjoy looking at is how people interpret how people from various ages would see themselves and how they would act mm-hmm. and how they would dress and what would happen. And I like to see that sort of clashing with, you know, what the producers are saying, hey, we need to do this to get this done. And what the movie execs are saying to say, you know, you can't do that, or we need to feature this, or
right.
Hey, guess what? We're going to have, you know, Queen music in this movie, about, you know, 14th century. So as a historian, I enjoy seeing all of that mm-hmm. sort of hit together on the big screen and explode in big, brilliant goodness if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes you're not lucky.
I know when I was sort of approaching looking at this epic historical stuff was I found myself finding a lot of war movies and a lot of things like that. But really, Hollywood has been into making movies like this for ever since really it Hollywood
has been
started
making movies,
you yeah. know, I mean,
absolutely.
You want to say, be all technical and say historical, you know, you have the Western, which is a historical movie in and of itself.
Yeah.
However, I sort of went out of my way and tried not to put any Westerns in this one.
Yeah, me too. I didn't go out of my way, but I did notice that mm-hmm. there was a lot of them.
Well,
something I was noticing looking at the list is Oscar loves,
Epic historical.
I mean,
movies?
How many of those damn things are best pictures out of all like the big old mm-hmm. list that we were looking at?
Yep.
A lot of them.
Well,
good
it attracts.
Ones.
It attracts. You know, the big actors. It attracts the big money. They're mm-hmm. they're huge productions, and they get, you know, because of that, I think they get. They've always gotten sort of a lot of commercialization as well. So,
mm-hmm. yeah,
yeah, and I think the appealing thing to me about these movies, well, I should preface this as saying there are a lot of big epic historical movies I haven't seen. So, I mean, when I was making my list, I couldn't include something like Lawrence of Arabia or anything sure. like that because I haven't mm-hmm. seen it. But I found I was looking at movies going, oh, I guess that is an epic historical movie. I guess yeah. that is epic, you know? Okay. You know? And then, you know, that's the other side is what do you consider to be epic
yeah.
rather than not epic, you know? I mean, because Star Wars is certainly an epic movie.
Yeah.
It's obviously not a historical movie.
Sure it is. It took place a long time ago and,
uh-huh.
yeah, whatever.
But yeah. Galaxy far, far away.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and that's exactly it. I mean, somebody's going to wind up saying this every single show that we do is, a lot of these movies fit in multiple genres.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and
oh, yeah.
I mean, that is certainly the case with this one. Ethan, why don't you get our top six rolling? What's your number six favorite?
Well, my number six favorite is, I guess technically you could call it a Western. It's actually the 1960 The Alamo, directed by John Wayne, and of Ooh. Course starring John Wayne
sure.
and Richard Widmark. They remade this movie a few years back with Billy Bob Thornton and
Dennis Quaid,
and it wasn't bad. But this original is, you know, a good 3 hours long. In fact, I found out there's an international cut that's 3.5 hours long. It's like
Holy
200
crap.
Minutes. And I mean, how much more epic can you get with a movie umpteen bajillion hours long with John Wayne in it and telling a historical tale of, you know, the historical legend of the Alamo. And from memory serving me right, you know, the movie is not exactly historically accurate
no.
at all.
No.
But, you know, it's still a John Wayne, you know, a 3 hour long Western epic, and so that's why I sort of stuck it in there. I really enjoy John Wayne running around as Davy Crockett, and the movie's definitely got some fun elements to it. And I'm actually surprised, as I was sort of moving stuff around my list, that I ranked it up to number six. So that's my number six, The Alamo.
Now, have either of you guys ever been to the Alamo?
No, I have not been to the Alamo.
I have not either.
I've been to the Alamo, and unlike Ozzy Osbourne, I didn't urinate on it, but I did sort of wander around a little bit, and it's not a big fort. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I was very surprised that all of that stuff happened in such a small place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, history just seems so huge. I mean, that, you know, whenever you do see something that's really there, it just seems smaller by comparison. I've seen some stuff, like, you know, like I saw the Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. I thought it seemed small compared to like everything I'd heard about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I have not been to the Alamo, but I've heard that before, that, you know, you're surprised that all this happened in such like a small and claustrophobic area. So I
absolutely.
Mean, yeah. I mean, cool. Well, Ben, what's your number six?
My number six is a pretty easy one. It's Gladiator with Russell Crowe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the first movie that I've seen that deals with Roman history that wasn't filmed in black and white that I really enjoy.
I love Gladiator. It's actually number nine on my list.
Oh, excellent. It's just the whole spectacle. You know, when you first get into the forum and looking at the costumes and seeing how they've recreated everything, it's not Rome HBO accurate, but it's accurate enough that it really gives, I think, a good portrayal of what life would be like back then, particularly, you know, if you happen to be a gladiator or a Roman emperor.
Mm-hmm. And talk about a great cast in that movie. I mean, you had Joaquin Phoenix, I think, giving probably one of the best performances in his career was in that movie. Obviously, this was the movie that sort of set Russell Crowe off on his path of Oscar gold. He got Oscar for this, and then he got the next year or the next year after that.
He's only got one.
No, he got two.
He only got one.
No, he got Gladiator, and
he only got one.
He got Gladiator, he got Beautiful Mind.
Want to throw some money on that, motherfucker?
Sure.
He lost. He lost that Oscar to, who was it that he lost to, the Beautiful Mind? Denzel Washington. Because, don't you remember, that was when he was getting all snarky, and he was starting to read poetry every time that he wanted, and people started getting sick of him? He won an Oscar for just a Gladiator. He did
just
not win.
Gladiator.
He did not win for Beautiful Mind. He was nominated. He was also nominated.
Because that was the year after the Insider.
What was?
The Gladiator.
Yes.
Was the year after Insider.
That was the year after the Insider.
Yeah.
And then year after that was A Beautiful Mind, and he did not win. And he's also been nominated another time since.
Maybe I'm getting it mixed up, because I think Beautiful Mind
only got
best picture.
Yeah.
Beautiful Mind. Okay.
Well, got best picture, best director. Supporting actress.
But anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
But anyway, it's Gladiator.
Here to educate you. You know I love you.
I know. Gladiator, I remember when Gladiator was about to come out, I was working with Aaron at the video store, and, and Aaron was like, oh, I'm really looking forward to this. And I was like, eh. And then we saw it. We completely did a flip-flop. He was like, eh. And I was like, dude, I love this movie. It is. I love Gladiator.
I like it. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It's not on my list, and I don't know.
It's one of those movies that at any given time I can just pop it on and sit there and just watch it, and I will not wander away from the television.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah, and I've got
that's one of the reasons why it's on my list.
Yeah, and I've got the extended cut on DVD, and I really enjoy the documentary on that DVD is really cool. Talking about how they made the movie. I really love
Ridley Scott does great documentaries on all of his stuff.
I love Ridley Scott for the most part.
Yeah, me too.
So, all right, that's cool. Aaron, what's your number six?
My number six is the 2005 Ridley Scott film, Kingdom of Heaven. I know you didn't like it, and I didn't like the main storyline. I didn't like the whole thing with with Orlando Bloom. I liked all the stuff in the background. I thought Edward Norton got robbed out of an Oscar nomination for that movie.
And I need to watch it again, but actually I've been really I've been waiting for the extended cut to come through my Netflix. So.
It's better.
I mean, I thought it was a beautiful movie.
Oh, yeah. I really liked it, and I thought it kind of got the shaft, but I understood why, because like the main story was stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that.
I mean, the main story with Orlando Bloom and being a blacksmith and like the second coming, it was silly. But like all the historical stuff with everything going on, I thought was cool. So that's my number six. What's your number five, Ethan?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry,
Ben.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Ben.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, you were saying something.
Shoot up the number five. It's when you look at these epic movies and you look at the historical stuff, you're really partially there for the spectacle as well.
Yeah.
And Kingdom of Heaven, it's a spectacular movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the literal sense of the word.
Beautiful film. I honestly, one of the aspects of the movie I really liked was I really enjoyed that everyone, there was no sort of a stereotype in the movie. It was,
that's what I very much liked.
It's like, oh, the, it's like, we're going to Jerusalem and we're going to go kill the Moors. Oh, they're horrible, evil people. When, no, they're actual, just real characters. You know, Saladin is not a bad guy.
He's a good dude. Just like,
He's just on the other side. You know,
it was weird that like the leaders were good dudes, you know, mm-hmm. King Baldwin and Saladin were good people. And it was the soldiers and the second in commands that were the bastards who were screwing everything up.
So that actually got a lot of praise for portraying Saladin in a fairly historically accurate.
Right. It also got some. It also got some protests because they were saying something positive about Muslim people.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, just sheesh.
Whatever.
People. And you know, I got to say.
Go ahead.
Any movie in which Orlando Bloom can kick ass and not look like a Nancy Pants elf, you got to give them some credit.
That's true, but he has to really work hard at not looking like a pansy ass elf.
Very much so.
My general issue with him is that's the second movie he did where he was supposed to be playing a blacksmith. And that,
yes.
I'm sorry, I've met blacksmiths. they don't look like Orlando Bloom.
No.
They have a lot more upper body strength and are a lot dirtier.
Same thing with archers.
He was new.
So,
All right.
So,
Ethan.
To my number five. My number five is a movie that I actually really enjoyed. My dad sat me down to watch a while back, and it's Anne of a Thousand Days.
Good movie.
Directed by Charles Gerrott and starring Richard Burton and Genevieve Bujold. And it is, of course, the story of, if you've watched the Tudors, it's basically the story of Henry VIII and his second wife. You know, it's one of those great movies from, you know, it's from the late 60s, so but it still sort of harkens back to the 1950s, you know, big Technicolor style of epic filmmaking. And I don't know how long the movie is or anything like that, but I really enjoyed the historical aspect of it, and I thought it just did a fun job. And plus, you got to see Richard Burton, and you know, who's just a phenomenal actor in his day. Yep. So, Anne of a Thousand Days.
Yeah, very good movie. Cool. I have nothing else to say about it, Ben.
I've never seen it, but it's on my list.
Yeah, check it out. It's real good.
Absolutely.
Okay, what's your number five?
My number five is another easy pick for me. It's horribly, horribly historically inaccurate in just about every sense except for one, which is the battle scenes, and it's Braveheart. Came out.
It's my number 10.
1995 with Crazy Mel.
Yep.
Excellent. And I really, really like it.
It's my number 10.
Particularly,
actually, yes. My God, people have written long dissertations about how horribly inaccurate the movie was, but it's still a fun movie.
Yeah, I like watching it.
It's a fun movie, and I think it really, really did a good good job of looking at medieval battle. If you've ever heard of something called hoplology, which is the study of weapon damage on the human body and how weapons work and whatnot, looking at that movie, you get a good sense of what a real good combat would look like in medieval times. And it didn't hurt either that the Irish troops that they brought in to play both sides, they actually brought in rival groups. So the battle scenes look even more realistic because they're actually out there beating the shit out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just doing it for the camera, but the way the blood flies, the massive wounds that you get from some of these weapons, ignore the fact that they're wearing blue paint because they hadn't done that since the Romans.
Yes.
But other than that, the rest of the battles, the weaponry, the armor that they use.
But hey, it looked cool. Also, and You know, you also need to ignore the fact that historically that princess was, you know, what, 12?
Yeah, and William Wallace died at 21. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Something like that. They put an extra.
Oh, yeah. It's still a fun movie. And I remember seeing it in theaters and coming out going, you know, I remember specifically thinking when I was walking out of theater, I'm like, I bet that movie's going to be nominated for an Oscar. Mm-hmm. And there you have it. You know, it not only was it nominated, it won. It's one of those weird ones that I think it's those are the only two awards that it won. It was as far as at the Academy Awards, it only won Best Picture and Best Director, which was kind of odd. But I mean, it's sad to say, you know, Mel Gibson did turn out a really fun, good, epic battle movie. You know, it's
Freedom.
As Aaron and I like to say, it was a good kill shit with swords movie. So.
Sure.
Yes.
Totally awesome. Well, Aaron, what is your number? What are we at? Five? Yep. What is your number five?
Mine would be the 1966 Fred Zinnemann film, A Man for All Seasons, the story of Sir Thomas More and everything that went on with him and blah, blah, blah. I love this movie. It's one of those movies that I put up there with High Noon. About the main character just being like one of those people that are just in an enviable position and, you know, standing up with great dignity and being a stand up person. And it was a fantastic performance by Paul Scofield. And I love that movie.
Which movie?
Man for All Seasons, 1966.
I have not seen it.
Very good movie. It's on Instant Stream, if I remember correctly.
It's in my Instant Stream to watch it.
Very good movie. Very good movie. Now,
when you guys say instant stream, do you mean watch it now on Netflix?
Yeah, watch it now on Netflix. Stream?
Yeah, okay, watch it now on Netflix. It means you can go watch it right this moment, assuming that it's there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great movie. And
we're Netflix junkies. What can we say?
Yeah. So.
Oh, I'm there too.
Yep. So that's my number five. Ethan, what's your number four?
My number four is a movie, one of those movies that I really, I started off as sort of not liking, but have grown to really appreciate it over the years. It's the 1984 Amadeus, directed by Milos Forman.
It's my number eight.
Starring F. Murray Abraham and Tom Hulce.
Mm-hmm. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that, you know, it's about, you know, Mozart, and but it takes a very cool way of telling the story of Mozart by, you know, talking from the point of view of this guy who hated him, more or less.
Yeah, Salieri.
And it's one of those movies where it's the performances in it are amazing. I mean, the epic, the grandeur of the movie is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's talking about Mozart, and you get Tom Hulce in there, and I don't know what else he went off to go do, but
he was in Parenthood.
Well, there you go.
I mean, he's done other stuff, but just nothing even close to that caliber.
Yeah. And I mean, Milos Forman, of course, a director that rings a few bells with me.
Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, Cuckoo's Nest.
Man,
and Amadeus is one of those, just one of those timeless classics, I think. Great look at several sort of eras in several small little pinpoints in history. During the life of Mozart. So Amadeus.
I went to that movie thinking I was going to hate it. I mean, hate it. Cause I'm not, uh-huh. I'm a fan of Mozart. I'm a fan of some classical music, but I'm not a fan of that style of movie. Or so I thought. That movie kicked ass. I really, really did enjoy it. They did such a good job.
It was,
and from what I understand, Mozart was actually kind of a dick.
Oh yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Oh.
But you're exactly right. You know, it's usually not, one of those types of movies that I enjoy, especially at the time in my life when I saw it. It's one that you sort of, I don't know. No, I did not see it when I was five. It is a movie you grow to appreciate and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoy that movie. It's a fantastic movie. What would you say is your number four, Ben?
My number four is Apocalypse Now from 1979.
I consider that a war movie, but I love that movie.
See, it is a war movie.
I wasn't too fond of it myself. So
you don't like anything.
No, I hate all movies.
You do.
Movies suck.
I first saw that probably in 1984 or 1985 when I was still fairly young, and it really influenced me. I mean, that's a great time to see a movie like that is when you're, you know, what, 14 or 15 years old, and you just got to watch and go, what the fuck is going on here?
Fight Club.
But as you sort of mature and go back and watch it again and again, I mean, it really kind of shows you just how screwed up war can be. Oh, yeah. It's such a great, it's got a lot of awesome people in it. And one of those movies, again, I can just sit down and watch over and over and over again.
Are you a fan of the original cut or the Redux?
I like the original cut. I've seen the Redux. I don't have any real issues with it, but I prefer the original cut. That's what I have.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, like I said, it's not one of my personal favorites. I sort of recognize it as its impact on film, and it's got some good performances in it, but very few Vietnam era Vietnam set movies like that really sort of ring with me. So. Mm-hmm. I wasn't too big of a fan. Like I said, great performances in it. You know, I mean, there's right. the legendary Robert Duvall scene where, you know, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
And sure.
Yeah.
That's a fun one. But, you know, it's just one of those movies that just didn't click with me.
Yeah. I think it's a great movie. I really enjoy it.
Well, what's your number four?
What is my, 1957 David Lean film, Bridge on the River Kwai. I love that movie.
Nice.
Bridge on the River Kwai, yes.
It's the Bridge of the River Kwai, starring Alec Guinness and William Holden. Yep. And
that one barely didn't make my list.
Love that movie. I don't really want to talk a whole lot about it, though. I just really like that movie.
That's a great film.
One of my favorite movie lines of all time is when he stops the people from blowing up the bridge, and he's just, oh, what have I done? It's just a great movie line and great movie. Really fun to watch. Yes. Well, kind of. But, you know, it's a great movie.
It is a great movie. And
well, I meant fun to watch, you know, in so much as the horrible shit that's going on.
And it barely did not make my list.
Yeah, I love that movie, though. It's my number four?
Yep, that was your number four.
What's your number three, Ethan?
My number three is another movie my dad exposed me to when I was a kid, and I've grown to appreciate. It's the 1956 Ten Commandments, directed by Cecil B. DeMille, and starring Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner. I personally love Yul Brynner, but we used to watch it every Christmas. We'd watch the Ten Commandments, and I think I've seen it enough times now that I don't need to see it again,
sure,
anytime soon. But it is one of those movies. I mean, that sort of is the. One of those movies that is the definition of the historical epic, and that's the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Did you
see The Prince of Egypt?
No.
There actually was a very respectful remake of it.
Oh, okay.
It really was. I mean, granted, it was a cartoon, but, you know, it was still a respectful remake of it.
Sure. So, I mean...
I saw that one in the theaters, and it was good, but I just have one quick question for you.
Uh-huh.
Would you really call it a historical epic?
That is a good point. I would say yes, because wow. I really enjoyed the segments in Egypt and stuff were showing the pharaohs and all that crazy stuff. But obviously,
are you implying the whole thing about, you know, whether or not the Bible is true or not? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Or... Well, look, I consider myself a Jedi, but we're all going to go and say that Star Wars wasn't a historical
event. No, of course not.
Right.
Of course not. I think Ten Commandments leans obviously more towards epic, but sure. It is set in history. I mean, you could argue the same thing about anything.
Inglourious Bastards.
Inglourious Bastards, which is, I love that movie.
I didn't put it on my list, but I should have.
You could say it about Inglourious Bastards, or, you know, even the original.
The Godfather.
Not the horrible remake, but the original Clash of the Titans. You know, I mean, that stuff didn't really happen, but I still consider it a historical movie.
Okay.
Cool. What's your number three, Ben?
My number three is Charlton Heston again in Ben-Hur in 1959. I freaking love this movie. Oh, I love it.
I've never seen Ben-Hur.
Aaron has just surprised me. He's never seen Ben-Hur.
Wow.
I just haven't.
I don't know if you've been living under a rock for all your life.
That's the guy that hasn't seen fucking Titanic or, Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, there's that.
Well,
that.
In Titanic, the ship sinks. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Lawrence of Arabia, there's a lot of sand.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And a guy named Lawrence.
Ben-Hur.
I thought it was a movie about Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not quite so much.
Not really. All right.
Is there a desert in Lawrence, Kansas?
Yes, it is Lawrence, Kansas. Not the same kind of desert that you're thinking of.
There's sand somewhere there, I'm sure.
So we sell it in the stores.
Exactly. You can buy it in the hardware stores.
Yeah.
All right. So Ben-Hur, why is Ben-Hur why is it your number three?
Who directed that?
Can't get much more epic and spectacle than that. And I mean, again, with the historical type stuff, it was made in the 60s where their interpretation of Roman history and our current interpretation of Roman history is, you know, changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the end, you have Jesus coming along and healing leprosy and crap.
Sure.
Like,
sure. And so you would consider that one to be a
historical. The rest of it is just amazing. Absolutely amazing for Roman spectacle.
William Wyler. That's right. I just couldn't remember who directed it, so I looked it up real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, William Wyler.
So Ben-Hur. Ben-Hur's got that absolutely phenomenal chariot scene, the chariot race.
Yes. I've seen the chariot race.
Which is just an awesome scene.
In which one of those stunt folks actually did perish.
Yeah.
Only one?
Yep.
Call that a movie.
Yes, and of course there's the infamous wristwatch that you can see.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But,
there's that one. Well, Aaron, educate us. What is your what's your number three?
Schindler's List.
Still haven't seen it.
It's a good date flick.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
It is. It's not one of those movies like Boys Don't Cry or one of those movies that makes you feel horrible to be a human being. Uh-huh. I mean, granted, the Nazis, they weren't very cool. I mean, they didn't do nice things, but it was just seeing what, you know, one man was able to do, because when you think about it, there's like this fun little, well, nothing fun about it at all, but a parallel in the story about, you know, all the horrible shit happened because of what one man did, that one man being Hitler. And then like that counter argument about what another man did being Oscar Schindler and saving all the people that he did. It's a really good movie. And I mean, it's obviously, it's got some tough imagery in it and everything, but you leave the movie feeling a little bit better about humanity than maybe walking into it. It's a really good movie, and I just think it's great.
I think that movie and E.T. were the only two movies I've ever cried at in a theater.
Oh, yeah.
I could see that.
And I haven't seen Schindler's List, and I know I need to see it. But as I've said many a time before, it's very rare that I find myself in a mood to sit down and watch a movie like Schindler's List.
Yeah, if you're in a movie to watch a great historical epic, do it. I mean, because it's, you know what happened in the Holocaust. I mean, it's not like you're going to be taken by surprise about anything that you've seen in it.
Schindler's List. It's one of those that I know I need to see at some point, and I plan on seeing it, you know, when I can. So that's about it, really.
Cool. So what's your number two, Ethan?
My number two is a quintessential American, you know, movie classic that is a huge epic historical movie. It is Gone with the Wind, 1939, directed by Victor Fleming.
I left that off my list for some reason.
And now apparently it was also co-directed at times by George Cukor and Sam Wood. It was also obviously starring Clark Gable and Vivian Leigh. What can really you say about Gone with the Wind? It's
a great movie, but it ain't no Gone with the Wind. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah,
it's the epitome of a great movie.
It is the movie that, adjusted for inflation, has made the most money in history.
By a lot.
A whole hell of a lot. It is a, you know, the movie has about a bajillion different quotes. There is, of course, the infamous light bulb that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great movie. It's another one of those quintessential epics. And I think it's, you know, one of, if not the first quintessential epic in full startling Technicolor, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
And so Gone with the Wind, based on a novel, based on all that stuff, but so many memorable things happen in that movie. And it's such a great perspective on the, you know, a piece of American history that we all learn about, obviously, and that's the Civil War. And, you know, I think it's an awesome look at it. So Gone with the Wind, my number two.
Cool. What's your number two, Ben?
My number two came out the same exact year as Braveheart, and it's a sort of another Scottish movie. It's Rob Roy.
I love that movie.
Me too. Very good movie.
It took me forever to see it. I saw it for the first time about a year and a half ago. Yeah,
it's
and
a great movie.
Starring Liam fucking Neeson. I love that movie.
Yes, Liam fucking Neeson. And that's a bit more historically accurate.
A little bit. Not a whole hell of a lot, but more than Braveheart.
Tim Roth is such a little bastard bit. In that movie.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
Yeah. Yeah,
he dies really pretty.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And again, the fight scenes are awesome. Mm, I mean, you got to love the fight scene.
And it's not one that's, you know, it's not nearly as long as Braveheart was. I think this one was only about 2 hours long.
Yeah, I think it was typical length.
Yeah. But yeah, I love Rob Roy. Rob Roy's great movie. Great movie. With Liam fucking Neeson, Jessica Lange. Yeah, it's that movie that year was really the year for the year for Scottish pride with that movie and Braveheart coming out. So
cool,
excellent,
very good. Am I on to my number two?
I believe you are.
Another David Lean film, Lawrence of Arabia. I just watched that again the other day, and man, that's a good movie. And I
need to see it.
Yeah, I should make you a copy of it or something. I mean, let you borrow it. But, you know, it's really, really good. I mean, it's just one of those movies that, I mean, you want to hate it because it's so great.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't. I mean, there's just nothing to hate about it. I mean, it's beautifully acted, beautifully shot, beautifully directed, long as shit, but doesn't feel like it. I mean, it's because it's one of those movies that's really good. So, I mean,
Well, David Lean is basically, you know, king of epics, from what I understand.
Pretty much.
I don't remember precisely what else he did, but
River Kwai.
Oh, did he do River Kwai? Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Well, there you go. So Lawrence of Arabia, you know, I definitely want to see it. I know next to nothing about it, so yeah. What about you, Ben?
In Arabia.
And it's got this character called Lawrence of Arabia. A long time ago, and I remember enjoying it very much. It's one of those movies that's been on my sort of queue to watch again. I haven't gotten to it, but I'll put it back on my Netflix queue.
Cool.
Excellent. Yeah, it's the same way for me. It's been a long time coming for me to watch it at some point, and
you'll enjoy it. Well, you might not. You don't like lots of stuff. I don't know. You might like it. You might not. But it's a really well made movie. And if you don't like it, I imagine you won't walk away like, what a piece of shit. You'll just be like, yeah, it was well made, but it's not for me.
Yeah.
It's a little bit out of my time period. I tend to like things that are a little bit older and a bit more European.
Sure.
That's just me. You know, as a movie itself, it's an excellent, excellent film.
Right. Well, my number one has already been mentioned. It is the 1959 Ben-Hur, directed by William Wyler. You know, starring Charlton Heston, Jack Hawkins, all those people. And to tell you the truth, because it was another movie that my dad had us watch every year, we watched it on Easter. That's the weird thing, is my dad's not a religious nut or anything like that. So he just...
That was when it was on. They'd show it every Easter on TV.
Yeah, and it was...
Your dad's a movie dude.
Yeah, see, so. I mean, my dad just loves movies, and he grew up watching these things. So, you know, it's another one that I grew to hate and loathe and despise because I had to watch it every year.
Mm-hmm.
That I can now look back on and go, you know, that was really good. And I got to say I like it. So, you know, it reminds me of my childhood, and, you know, it's Ben-Hur, you know. I've already said it, and I'll say it again. It's the whole chariot race scene is just breathtaking to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got Jesus running around eventually, but, like, you know, our joke was whenever my dad queued up one of these movies to watch, is we're going to watch Judah Moses Ben-Hur. So, and I can honestly say I've seen Ben-Hur and Ten Commandments enough times that they sort of mix together. So I'm like, isn't Yul Brynner in Ben-Hur? That'd be cool. So
I think every movie would be a little bit cooler than
exactly.
Yul Brynner was in it.
Exactly, but that's all I got. I got my number one's Ben-Hur.
Yeah, still haven't seen it. I probably will, though.
Cool. Well, Ben, what is your number one?
My number one is a bit of a departure for me off of my regular movie list here, but it's one of my all-time favorite movies ever, and it's Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa.
Oh, yeah, that movie sucks.
Yeah,
I hate it so much. I say, looking at the poster right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great movie.
Yeah, I mean... That to me captures everything of what an epic movie should be. I mean, every single shot in that movie is there for a reason. And it all just, it's such a long movie, but it never feels like you're sitting there for 3.5 hours,
yeah,
you know, watching this movie. It's always over a little bit too quickly for me, which is one of the things that just makes it amazing.
Yeah. And I wish that they would all win this time I'm watching it. You know, like some kind of awesome director's cut where they come out laser guns or something, you know.
That would be so awesome.
That would just come.
No, I mean, my love of Seven Samurai is not...
Well-documented.
Is well-documented, and I didn't put it on this list basically because it is my number one movie of all time, and sort of I'm going, well, you know, I'm going to consider this more foreign, more samurai movie type of thing.
Me too. So,
you know, if you want to go ahead and consider my top six list, my, you know, the first six and... being actually number two to number seven, nothing will. It's very unlikely that anything is ever going to supplant Seven Samurai as my favorite movie of all time. So
sure,
it is one of those movies that is just so amazing to watch. And
what about the Justin Bieber movie?
Oh well, that too. That's amazing to watch.
That's in 3D too.
I know, but Seven Samurai. Occasionally you can catch it on, you can catch it in a theater, for,
yeah,
it's on instant watch.
I know, but I've got the nice nifty Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And it's such a beautiful movie though. You know, there's just nothing much else I can say that will give it any kind of, you know, any more than I've already said about it. It's just such a wonderful film.
Yeah, for anybody who's listening who hasn't seen it, you owe it to yourself to go out
and pick again. It's one of those movies that you get a real joy out of exposing someone to, because I got to sit down with my girlfriend at the time and had her watch it, and she was just mesmerized by it, and she doesn't like long movies, and I'm like, yep, this movie is the awesome. That's how good it is. So.
Well, that's kind of like Kurosawa was. I mean, mm-hmm. Everything he made was great. I mean, everything he made was great.
Yeah, and Seven Samurai is definitely his masterpiece.
Yeah, I like that one better, but Ikiru. But you know, that's just me. Mm-hmm. I guess we're getting into my number one.
What's your number one? Yeah.
Let's see. My number one is 1949, another William Wyler movie. It's The Best Years of Our Lives. It is a movie that I think is. It annoys me that it's not more recognized than it is. I mean, it won Best Picture and Director and Actor and all that good stuff at the Oscars. But it's one of those best pictures that just doesn't have a lot of coverage. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you have stuff like, you know, I don't know, Gone with the Wind and, you know, stuff like that that's, you know, part of the lexicon of great movies. And I love The Best Years of Our Lives. It's, a story about three soldiers returning home from World War II and, you know, just finding their lives completely different when they get back. And because it was made in 49, it was really ahead of its time in so much as, you know, I mean, you saw the kind of stuff going on that you heard about with the soldiers returning after Vietnam with, you know, being called baby killers and stuff like that. And it's also just a beautiful story, and it's got its funny moments. It's got its tragic moments. It's a fantastic movie, and the DVD sucks. No special features, only has chapter stops, doesn't even have subtitles, and there's not a Blu-ray of it, and that irritates the hell out of me. I love that movie so much, but it's my number one.
All right. Well, I think we're ready for the rundown then.
Yeah.
Well, the rundown on my list would be my number 10 is Braveheart. Number 9 is Gladiator. Number 8 is Gandhi from 1982.
I almost put that on there.
My number 7 is one that is arguably not a historical epic, but it's the 1996 Hamlet, directed by Kenneth Branagh and starring Kenneth Branagh.
It's a great movie.
My number 6, The Alamo. Number 5, Anne of the Thousand Days. Number 4, Amadeus. Number 3, The Ten Commandments. Number 2, Gone with the Wind. And of course, number 1, Ben-Hur. Ben, what's run yours down? Would you?
Sure. My number 10 is The Right Stuff.
Still haven't seen that one.
Thought you hated that.
Another one you got to sit down and see.
Good movie.
It's
in my Netflix queue.
Number 9 is Full Metal Jacket. Another war movie.
Yep.
Number 8, getting back to the Roman times, is Life of Brian by Monty Python.
I love that movie.
You don't get much more epic than Python. Number seven is another Kenneth Branagh film, Henry V, his interpretation of Shakespeare, and came out in 89.
Sure.
And then number six is Gladiator. Number five is Braveheart. Four with Apocalypse Now. Three is Ben-Hur.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that.
No, that's me.
What the heck was that? Two is Rob Roy, and number one is Seven Samurai.
Nice.
Excellent. My number 10 was obviously not very historically accurate, but it was fun. And that was The Patriot. My number nine was Braveheart. My number eight was Amadeus. My number seven was Patton. My number six was Kingdom of Heaven. My number five was A Man for All Seasons. My number four was A Bridge on the River Kwai. My number three was Schindler's List. My number two was Lawrence of Arabia. And my number one was The Best Years of Our Lives.
So, nice.
I guess that's going to be wrapping up our top six segment.
Not a lot of overlap on our list this time around.
But it's a gigantic, gigantic genre. Mm-hmm. So many movies
and
in it.
It really struck me as I was putting together this list for my stuff, like how few I've really seen that at least I would classify as epic and epic historical type of movie.
Yeah.
And I started off by just listing them all out, and I think I had maybe 15 or 16. Sure. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great stuff and a great topic to talk about. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Process of trying to die, I think.
Yep. No, I'm back. This is our outro segment. We just had a fun little discussion where we discussed the epic/historical film genre. We had Mr. Ben on. What's your last name again, Ben? Ben Gerber.
Just like the knife.
Yes. Not like the damn baby food.
You said, let me on your show or I'll cut you.
But he chose epic and historical, and it made for an interesting discussion. I enjoyed having you on, Ethan.
Oh, yeah. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Ben.
Thanks. And I had a great time with you guys, too. This is fun.
Yeah, it is kind of fun. That's why we do it every week. Mm-hmm. What do we have coming up next week, Ethan?
Well, next week we're supposed to have Victor Cantu on the podcast. Victor is one of the hosts of the Fistful of Comics and Games podcast. And he wants to talk chick flicks.
That'll be fun. So, there's some good chick flicks.
Mm-hmm. And I think coming up sometime relatively soon, we're going to be having a special episode of where the Bagged and Boardcast is going to invade us for the first time. I think we're going to try to get all three of them on here to invade us because we've invaded them once.
Yep, it was fun.
And then we're going to talk probably bad comic book movies, I think, what we're going to talk about. We're figuring it all out, but I think during that episode we'll probably also we'll probably reveal who the winners of the newest round of inductees into the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthaz is. Speaking of which, you can go to the website, redphonezone.com, right now and vote for whoever should get in. The nominees are Jeffrey Rush, Joss Whedon, John Goodman, and Sean Connery. So go in and vote for who you think should have the... who you think should basically be given the opportunity or given the privilege of being in the Zone of Ruth Oz and allowing them to have fucking added to their name. So it would be we could in a few weeks have Jeffrey fucking Rush or Joss fucking Whedon or John fucking Goodman or Sean fucking Connery. So
now I have a question about this.
Yes, sir.
Is Samuel L. Jackson in the Order of Ruth Oz?
He is not, although he was nominated once, and I believe in the very first round of nominations he was nominated, but he did not win.
If he makes it in, is he going to be Samuel motherfucking Jackson or just Samuel fucking Jackson?
It'll probably.
Probably just Samuel L. fucking Jackson. It is sort of the way of things. But the current, I think he lost out to Clint fucking Eastwood, so I mean that's not a shallow person to lose to. So.
Nope, absolutely not.
But I think the current roster of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruth Oz is, of course, Sir Christopher fucking Lee, followed up by Bruce fucking Campbell. And after him was Clint fucking Eastwood, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And Stan the fucking Man Lee.
Stan the fucking Man Lee. And then our tie. Our first ever tie of Kurt fucking Russell and Liam fucking Neeson. So hopefully this next time we're not going to have another tie.
Yeah. That's what we're hoping for.
We'll see what's happened. But last time I looked, we had about 14 votes. So go onto our website at redphonezone.com and vote for...
Vote now.
Vote for who you want to be in the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruth Oz. And then I guess that is it for us today.
Yeah, I don't have anything else. Ben, do you have anything you'd like to add? Do you have anything you need to pimp?
No, not at the moment. I just wanted to say thanks for having me on. This has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it is a lot of fun.
Be sure to check out Ben's stuff over at Troll in the Corner. And I think it's just trollitc.com, isn't it?
Trollitc.com will get you there. Trollinthecorner.com will get you there as well.
Excellent.
If you hit up Google, I think we're the only Troll in the Corner on Google.
Cool. Excellent. That helps, too.
That would help.
So, yeah, go hit Troll in the Corner and see some really fun, cool RPG blogs going up there. Some cool news and cool content going up there pretty much every day now.
Every day.
At this point. So, good stuff. And I hope you have submitted yourself for any consideration, my friend.
I agree.
Yeah. All absolutely right. Have.
Well, that is it, I think, for the show today.
That'll be it. Well, until next week, when we're going to be discussing chick flicks, I am Aaron.
I am Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly.